In 2021, Wizards of the Coast printed 186 new potential commanders. Not all commanders speak to all players. We all have our own preferences and playstyles, after all. But for people who followed the format closely, it felt like trying to drink from a fire hose. Of that 186, there are a number of commanders printed in 2021 who I still want to build a deck for. Cards that spoke to me for one reason or another, which I still haven't assembled into a deck. And today, I want to share some of my thoughts on those commanders. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we're looking at the commanders of 2021 who I've tinkered with, explored, or at least considered. I think there's a lot of really cool potential with all of these commanders, and even if I haven't been able to build them yet, maybe I'll spark some inspiration with my musings for you today. I was going to include a commander from every set released this year, but to be honest, there weren't commanders from every set released this year which appealed to me, and I think it'd be obvious when I was being disingenuous about a commander who had piqued my interest. I wanted this list to be something that really spoke from the heart, as I found that commanders who really appeal to me inspire the decks that stick around the longest for me. So without further ado, I'm going all the way back to Kaldheim at the beginning of the year, where there was an uncommon commander from this set who looked like a really cool card advantage engine, and that is Vega the Watcher, a 2-2 bird spirit with flying, and, whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, draw a card. There are obviously some cool potential options here. Most clearly, Vega was meant to work alongside the Fortell ability, but that triggered ability was wired to work with a number of different mechanics from Magic's history. Most recently, our return to Innistrad gave us some fresh cards with Flashback, as well as older sets like Lorwyn Block giving us Retrace, and our last trip to Ravnica Block giving us Jumpstart. It also combines well with abilities that let you cast creatures from graveyards, like Unearth from all the way back in Alara Block, or more recently with the Disturb mechanic from our return to Innistrad. There's also the option to do an Artifacts Matter style deck on the back of something like Mystic Forge, as casting from the top of your library triggers Vega as well. And if you have some way to pull the shenanigans off, you can respond to Vega's triggered ability. So you could cast a card from the top of your library, trigger Vega, hold priority, check the top of your library, see if it's something you want in hand or something to cast off the top of your library. It would take a lot of setting up, but there is some potential here. In theory, you could even do something really neat with maybe a Spirit Tribal deck, or you could go really hard into the Crimson Vow spirits, which allow you to pop auras out of your graveyard onto Vega, which would then make a weird bird spirit Voltron commander who paid you off in cards every time you cast one of these auras from your graveyard. There's a lot of potential options here, and I do want to go back at some point and revisit this happy little bird. Next, from the main Strixhaven Standard Legal set, there's a Boros control deck I really want to try out, and it is built with Mila Crafty Companion, one white for a legendary creature Foxy, 2/3, with whenever an opponent attacks one or more planeswalkers you control, put a loyalty counter on each planeswalker you control, and whenever a permanent you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card. This is a modal double-faced card, and on the back of Mila we have Luca, Wayward Bonder, 4 red-red. For a legendary planeswalker, Luca, starting loyalty is 5. For +1, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. If a creature card was discarded this way, draw 2 cards instead. At -2, you can return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste, but you must exile it at the beginning of your next upkeep. And finally, at -7, the ultimate reads, you get an emblem with. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, it deals damage equal to its power to any target. Now, White has gotten a lot of sweet new tools in 2021, and Boros may have what it takes to build a powerful value engine. This commander pays you off every time your opponents try to remove any of your permanents, and it seems like it could be a very potent potential stacks commander. On the flip side, we have a planeswalker who can be your commander, and who draws cards at a +1, which means we have a potential parity breaker for cards like Humility. Luca's +1 enables us to throw away creature cards which may be less useful once we have Humility online in exchange for potentially getting more controlling options that your deck needs at that point in the game. In addition, a Super Friends theme is possible here, providing your walkers with a little bit more protection as long as Mila is on board, and White has also gotten some nice recursion in cards like Bereaved Survivor alongside their old standbys like Sun Titan, which pair very nicely with Luca's rummaging +1 ability. I like low-color decks a lot, and I really like exploring the depth that colors have, particularly when those colors are historically seen as being bad in Commander. And I think that Mila and Luca provides a really interesting shell for a Boros control deck. Moving right along to Modern Horizons 2, there's Karth the Lion, 2 black-green for legendary creature Human Warrior, a 3-5. Whenever Karth the Lion enters the battlefield, or a Planeswalker you control dies, look at the top 7 cards of your library. You may reveal a Planeswalker card from among them and put it into your hand. Then put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. In addition, Karth reads, Planeswalker's loyalty abilities you activate cost an additional +1 to activate. Karth seems like the perfect head to a Garruk tribal deck, but he also negates the loyalty loss on several War of the Spark Walkers, which is unique. Green-Black also has access to Grist, the Hungertide, and it can get her very easily out of your library, since it is a creature in your library and the graveyard, to potentially get the ball rolling on searching up more Planeswalkers. In addition, Garruk Cursed Huntman from Eldraine creates Wolf Tokens, who give all Garruk Planeswalkers loyalty counters when they die. And if we're looking a little bit broader, besides just Garruk Tribal, there are a lot of options in Golgari, 65 legal Planeswalkers. And interestingly, with the way Karth the Lion's ability is worded, 28 of those 65 walkers can either ultimate immediately on being cast with Karth, or can ultimate after a single plus activation. Ultimates on these Planeswalkers are exceedingly powerful, and it doesn't take too many of them to really sway the game in your favor. For a little while, I was running a blue-red Super Friends deck off the back of the original Battle Bond, Will and Rowan Kenrith. That deck played into a lot of unique tricks to get your Planeswalkers to ultimate very quickly, and I could see Karth the Lion filling a very similar role. Now for something completely different, Adventures in the Forgotten Realms didn't have a lot of interesting commanders for me, but I did tinker around a little bit with an uncommon legendary creature, Trelasara Moondancer, green-white for a 2-2 legendary creature elf cleric with, whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on Trelasara and scry 1. Oddly enough, Selesnya doesn't explore life gain matters very much on their legends, but Trelasara offers an interesting payoff for life gain decks in a card filtering engine. The classic life gain deck is Soul Sisters, and there's a pretty simple curve of a 1-mana Soul Sister, like Soul Warden or Soul's Attendant, into a turn 2 Trelasara, with her Enter the Battlefield ability triggering the scry and putting an additional +1/+1 counter on her, meaning for 2-mana you just got a 3-3 with a free ETB scry. Then, each additional creature you play will make her even bigger, and continue to scry through your deck to dig for action. There are a few potential ways to combine this with life gain payoffs from white, like Dawn of Hope to draw additional cards. It can also potentially combine with +1/+1 matters cards from back in the Abzan faction in Khans of Tarkir, with ways to give your commander evasion. It could also play similarly to my old Karlov of the Ghost Council deck, without necessarily being quite so oppressive, which could fit an interesting niche in our playgroup. Adventures in the Forgotten Realms also had a number of commander decks released alongside the main set, and while Prosper Tomebound is a really cool card, I don't think I have a lot more to offer that well-explored commander. Instead, I want to talk for a minute about Min, Wily Illusionist, 1 blue-blue for a legendary creature Gnome Wizard, a 1-3. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 1-1 blue illusion creature token with. This creature gets +1/+0 for each other illusion you control. And whenever an illusion you control dies, you may put a permanent card with a mana value less than or equal to that creature's power from your hand onto the battlefield. Blue is really good at drawing small numbers of cards consistently. In particular, this turns a card like Consecrated Sphinx into an even more must-answer threat, as Min plus Consecrated Sphinx essentially makes Min into a Tendershoot Dryad, making X1s which gets bigger every turn. And then it plays a very similar game to the mono blue version of Braids, allowing you to cheat very powerful permanents into play once you have a decent number of illusions, only you don't need to share the love with your opponents the way that the mono blue Braids does. And I don't necessarily think you need to combine it with actual illusion creature cards, although that is an interesting route to explore. After Adventures of the Forgotten Realms, we got our much-heralded return to Innistrad, and in Midnight Hunt, I was much more interested in zombies than werewolves. Well, actually, I was also interested in vampires, but Florian falls just below this next commander in terms of decks I want to try to build. And that commander is Jadar, Ghoulcaller of Nephalia, one and a black for a 1-1 legendary creature human wizard with, at the beginning of your end step, if you control no creatures with Decayed, create a 2-2 black zombie creature token with Decayed. This is just such a cool bit of design. One of my favorite cards in Magic is Bitter Blossom and similar effects, giving you a free creature every turn. And in black, they're usually just used as free sack fodder. Black has given us a ton of new variants on sack a creature, draw some cards recently. With the printing of cards like Village Rights and Deadly Dispute, there are a lot of powerful things you can do when you always have a creature you can sacrifice. See our episode on Rograkh for more information about that. And black has a number of really good options which have the quote-unquote cost of needing to sacrifice creatures. Plus, I wouldn't mind telling Brando from Commander Cookout Podcast that I disagree with his assessment of this card. Moving right along, we got not one but two Innistrad sets this fall, and Crimson Vow has some interesting commanders of its own. The one I want to talk about here is Katilda, Dawnheart Martyr. She is one white-white for a legendary creature Spirit Warlock with flying, lifelink, and protection from vampires. Katilda's power and toughness are each equal to the number of permanents you control that are spirits and or enchantments, with a disturb cost of 3 white-white, giving us Katilda's Rising Dawn on the back of this card. This is a legendary enchantment aura which enchants a creature. Enchanted creature has flying, lifelink, and protection from vampires, and it gets plus X, where X is the number of permanents that you control that are spirits and or enchantments. It also has the normal disturb rider of, if Katilda's Rising Dawn would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. I've been following a lot of the recent discussion from CDH content creators like the Mind Sculptors, as well as a lot of the brewing going on in concepts like WinConless stacks. I'm not sure if Katilda has what it takes, but she does break parity on one of the most powerful stacks effects in all of Commander, Humility. As an aura on the backside, Katilda's Rising Dawn can create a creature who is actually unblockable, as nobody else will have any creatures who can fly with Humility on the field. Lots of white enchantments in CDH are very powerful, particularly Rule of Law effects. And the lifelink on a big flying beater can overcome one of the big weaknesses which CDH stacks decks face. Namely, they are often vulnerable to being beaten down by their opponents and knocked out of the game, where player removal does a good job of removing the stacks pieces they've put into play. Outside of CDH, it's really easy to get a lot of white enchantments as well as a lot of spirit tokens to pump Katilda up to some dangerous levels. Both of these possibilities look pretty sweet, and it's my most active project right now. So, those are the commanders who seem the most appealing to me. My list of commanders I'd still like to try to build from 2021. Have you had any success brewing with any of the legends on this list? Do you have any commanders from 2021 who you still haven't gotten around to yet? Have I maybe inspired you to go back and try? Let us know. Leave us a comment on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. Add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG, or send us an email, where we are GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.